On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are already. Thorn in the Side, Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It's the home of what we like to call conversation radio. You can get the Horn simply by logging into the stream or, well, not even signing in, just clicking on the stream at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The links are also at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And we are available at TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and several others that I'm aware of but can't remember the names of. And we're still trying to sort out the whereabouts of the Horns listing or the mysterious disappearance of the Horns listing at iTunes Radio. I have no freaking earthly idea what happened. But I did go and I did look. And lo and behold, no, we're not listed there anymore, at least on the iTunes I have here. But be that as it may, we will press on. I have happy news to report. I announced at the end of the program last night that no combination of individuals had met Darlene's challenge for Wednesday night prayer meeting. I got up this morning and found out that it had, in fact, been met. So thank you very, very much. We had a number of contributions overnight that put us over the limit for, or over the top for meeting Darlene's challenge, which in fact does take me to the mailbag. Just because. Not everybody's listening live, and the folks who don't listen live deserve to be heard just as much as those who do. Okay? Let's see here. We'll start with this. You know, last night we heard from Bermuda. This morning we heard from Singapore. I won't use names because, well, yeah, okay. Hi, Bob. Thank you for your great work. So glad to hear a voice of sanity from your country. Good luck and best regards, Pim. Thank you very kindly. You see, I think there is a desire to hear. Everybody knows that the American for-profit media are utterly, completely, totally, and without reserve corrupt. They're bought, they're paid for, and they are either intentionally or unintentionally self-censoring. It takes an independent voice, an independent broadcast operation. I'm not talking about my voice, you know. It takes an independent broadcast operation to be able to speak with some degree of candor about what is going on in this country. And we're going to sort of, well, we always go there, but it seems like, sometimes shows just write themselves. This is going to be one of those evenings. And sometimes I hate it because it just feels like you want to crawl under a table and, you know, curl into a fetal ball and wait for it all to pass. But you can't. We have to live in the world. It is the world that we find ourselves living in that is so godforsaken disturbing. But thank you for the very kind words, Pim. Thank you. Singapore, you know. Now, I guess the downside of being independent and being able to not self-censor is that it's hard to get, you know, Preparation H or whatever, or Colgate toothpaste, or super sugar frosted chocolate bombs breakfast cereal to sponsor you. And that means, as we see, that if we want this kind of candor, if we want this unvarnished conversation, we have to be the ones who create it and sustain it. And so I am happy to announce that we are now $635 away from finishing out the month of August to the good. That's very, very good news. Because, as I have said, for reasons that don't fully bear going into, things have been tough, and they are only going to get tougher. I hope they get better, but I don't know. It's just going to be, it's just difficult. So your kind contributions of support are more important than ever, and more appreciated than ever. Anyway, back to the mailbag. This from Michael. By the way, I saw an editorial cartoon today. I was over looking at the website of the Rochester Democrat and Gazette, and I saw an editorial cartoon of Todd Akin, and it reminded me that there really are those little moments where we say things into the ear of the universe that wind up in places we never would have imagined. I would love to give credit to the artist who drew this editorial cartoon, but I didn't stop to save it along the way. I'm sorry. But it was late night before last, and then I shared it with you last night, the note we got from Michael asking whether Todd Akin had declared Hammer Time. Because he said his campaign was legit and he would not quit, therefore too legit to quit. That was Michael, night before last. Well, guess what the T-shirt said on the Todd Akin drawing in the editorial cartoon? That's right, too legit to quit. Hammer Time! So this evening, we will begin with an email from Michael. He says, I keep wondering to myself... Now steel yourselves, because God knows if there were some sort of filthy little right-wingers out there, and they actually took notice of the conversations that we have here, they'd be having a blue-purple polka-dotted conniption over this. I'm sure it would be good for several weeks of rabid single-handed typing, single-fingered typing over at Free Republic. They'd probably, I don't know, get out there, get a Brain Morans T-shirts and stuff. But Michael writes, I keep wondering to myself, has there ever been a hurricane in the history of hurricanes that had the potential to do so much good for humanity? I know this is probably an evil Pat Robertson-esque thought, and that I am a bad person as a consequence, but surely I'm not the only person to ponder this. I think we will probably get several communiques indicating that, no, Michael, you're not the only one to think of this. All you normal, decent people in the Tampa area, batten down the hatches. All you repiglickins, don't worry. It's not going to hit. Okay? I'm just saying. So no, Michael, you're not a terrible person. You're a person who's sick of the filth that these right-wingers pump into everything that touches our existence. Then there's this note that rolled in from Georgia. She says, I know this isn't Friday. It doesn't have to be, Georgia. I know this isn't Friday, but I couldn't contain myself because my blood is boiling. You may have seen this already, but I came across this picture today, and she attached it to the email. And it reaffirmed everything I think about the puffed-up lizard that calls himself the only living link to God. she's talking about the old Nazi Hitler Youth anti-aircraft gunner, you know, Benny the Rat. That, we're back to George's words now, that toad sucker has the hubris to sit on his throne and let people kneel in front of him to kiss his ring. Well, I saw this picture and it just broke my heart. It made me weep. Kiss his ring? Fat chance he can kiss my ass. He knows these things are happening and still sits resplendent in his Halloween getup, drinking his sacramental wine while the sacrificial lambs starve to death. I am so pissed off I'm seeing colors I never knew existed. The sad part is that he will probably live to be 100 and then be replaced by someone just like him. Millions of people bowing to a squatty little fat man with a Nero complex. The problem is that the superior race bullshit they ingrained in him when he was a good little Nazi is still there. When he dresses in his Empire waist gown, ruby slippers, and that house of... I was doing okay till I got to that part. When he dresses in his Empire waist gown, ruby slippers, and that House of Whoville hat, I'm sure he just thinks, let's him eat cake. Hugs to Agnes and love to all. Georgia. And the graphic to which she is describing, the graphic to which she is describing, or to which she refers, I sort of ran those two ideas together there, is one which shows Benny sitting on his golden throne with his dress. He doesn't have his House of Whoville hat or his red Prada slippers that I can tell. That's on the left of the graphic. On the right of the graphic is a starving child carrying a starving child somewhere, presumably, in the Horn of Africa. Or maybe the Sudan. Underneath it, the words of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. Go, sell everything you have, and give it to the poor. Mark 10:21. With an editorial comment underneath the photograph, I'm quite sure he could sell that golden throne at a very good price. Yeah, he could. But please to understand that this is a problem that has plagued Holy Mother Church for at least 1,000 years. You know, I told you I've been rereading, and it's a very dense book, and, you know, I'll read 5 or 10 pages a night before bed, and I'm not through it. But I've been rereading, because I read it the first time a long time ago, I've been rereading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror, which is basically a chronicle of the 14th century, you know, the 1300s, the century when the bubonic plague struck Europe and wiped out 1/3 of the population. It's also the century that gave rise to the Great Schism, in which there was a French-favored pope at Avignon and a pope favored by England and everybody else at Rome. Clement in Avignon, Urban in Rome. And they were both as corrupt as the day is long, selling benefices, indulgences, and creating the atmosphere that eventually gave rise to the complete split, another schism, that left us with Protestantism, which was simply a slightly more decentralized version of Roman Catholicism. If you notice through history, Rome can't get along with anybody. Couldn't get along with the Greeks, so we have that schism. Can't get along with half of the... So they get dragged to Avignon by the French kings. The world wants the Pope back at Rome, so, boom, another schism. Can't get along. Can't get along with a German monk. Schism, Protestantism. And yet they still have the unmitigated gall to suggest that this old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, this former member of the Hitler Youth, has some sort of special connection to God, and I can completely understand George's manifest disgust. This note also rolling in from D. I was so happy to have you back on the air this week. Thank you, D. I have really enjoyed this week's shows. I started to call in last night, and then I saw what time it was and knew you wouldn't have time. Sorry. Maybe there'll be time tonight. There's always the possibility. I really enjoyed your call with one of your last callers. I'm sorry I can't think of her name. I think you're probably thinking of Tracy, D. Anyway, I've been thinking this all along, and now it is true. They're going to start bidding on water rights here in America. Not that this is new generally. They've been doing that in the so-called third world for years. I knew that this was going to get to us sooner or later. Probably sooner. Dee says, I'm sure you're already on this, but if not, investing in water stocks, profit from the new water market. If there's going to be a new water market, and this is me editorializing, if there's going to be a new water market, does that mean that eventually Wall Street will have a water bubble? Or a water balloon? Dee says, looking forward to the show tonight. Thank you, Dee. The fact of the matter is, it's not a slogan. We're not selling bumper stickers. We don't have any coffee mugs with it on it. This is nothing but a 3 a.m. sweaty foreheaded call to what the Bible calls those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. They want it all. They want it all. Every last bit, every drop of water, every gasp of air, they want it all. You know, I heard Malloy last night reading that compendium of what historically has been done to greedy-ass bankers through the ages. Even the death penalty in the age of Hammurabi was not sufficient to stop them from preying upon people. You know why? Because the potential for wealth outweighs the risk of being caught. So even if a few people did get thrown in the Tigris or the Euphrates, even if a few bankers got caught and chopped into tiny pieces and had their constituent parts scattered to the corners of the realm, that just meant that there were some who didn't. I heard Malloy reading about Rule 70 of the Code of the City of Florence regarding bankers. And how they were, when caught, they were to be tortured. And that struck me as, yeah, don't threaten to kill them. They don't fear death. Because they know that for every one that gets caught, there are 99 who get away. And, well, you know what? Them's pretty damn good odds. No. How many of us here, and I know we do, because I play at least one clip from it more often than I can consider or can count. How many Princess Bride fans in the audience? That magnificent little film with Robin Wright, Peter Falk, Fred Savage, Cary Elwes. It was an all-star cast. Andre the Giant. Right. Well, it struck me that there might be something instructive there. This is it. Don't say that we're... No. The only way you rein in predators is to make them understand that every day of their life after they've been caught is going to be nothing but sheer hell. Not something quick like a beheading. Sheer Like this. I hope. Okay, well, we'll get there in a minute. God, I remember when YouTube didn't have an ad in front of every clip. Thanks, Google! Now I'm sure the connection will go down because I've criticized Google, right? Yeah. No, but you know what I'm talking about.
Don't you agree, Your Highness?
A technicality that will shortly be remedied. But first things first. To the death.
No! To the pain.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I'll explain. And I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
That may be the first time in my life a man has dared insult me.
It won't be the last. To the pain means the first thing you lose will be your feet below the ankles. Then your hands at the wrists. That's your nose.
And then my tongue, I suppose. I killed you too quickly the last time. A mistake I don't mean to duplicate tonight.
I wasn't finished. The next thing you lose will be your left eye, followed by your right.
And then my ears, I understand. Let's get on with it.
Wrong! Your ears you keep, and I'll tell you why. So that every shriek of every child at seeing your hideousness will be yours to cherish. Every babe that weeps at your approach, every woman who cries out, "Dear God, what is that thing?" will echo in your perfect ears. That is what the pain means. It means I leave you in anguish, wallowing in freakish misery forever.
I think you're bluffing.
It's possible, pig. I might be bluffing. It's conceivable, you miserable, vomitous mass. I'm only lying here because I lack the strength to stand. Then again, perhaps I have the strength after all.
And therein lies the question. That's us! Really? They think we're laying here because we lack the strength to stand. But do we? Understanding all the way to our toenails that they want it all, down to the water, down to the air, down to the whatever we might hope to collect for some sort of less than miserable old age. They want it all. Would that we had political leaders with spines, as our buddy Andy mentions. Look at these predators and say, to the pain. Not to the death. To the pain. You know, the Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. But when a member of the financial elite plunders not only the coffers, not only the accounts, but the very hopes and dreams of an entire segment of society, is to the pain cruel? Is it unusual? No, what is unusual is that any of these vomitous pigs, was that the line? Get punished at all. And what is cruel is to leave justice pleading in the name of their victims. A little correction rolling in from Dr. John. The Rochester Papers, the Democrat and Chronicle. What did I call it? Democrat and Gazette or something? Yeah. Morning Glory and Moral Volcano, Battle Cry of Freedom. God bless you, Mark Twain. Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Dr. John. And the artist who drew the cartoon with Todd Akin, Too Legit to Quit, is John Darko. And it originally appeared in the Columbia, Missouri Daily Tribune. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. I appreciate that. Response coming in from Bermuda Sand. We heard from her last night. She said, I heard my email on the horn last evening, totally shocked. I've never done anything like that in my entire life. Can you answer a few questions for me? What is the difference between Medicare and Medicaid? Okay, that's easy. Medicare is an old age, supposedly, well, it's a retirement medical system that one presumably gets upon attaining the age of 65, and it is federally administered. Medicaid is a generic term used for a single-payer system funded by the federal government but administered by the several states. The states then set the parameters around which one may be covered by that. Okay? It's called by different names in different states. For instance, in Wisconsin, it's called Badger Care. In Tennessee, it was called Ten Care. That kind of thing. Here in West Virginia, we just call it Medicaid. Next question. Okay, so I'm one to the good. When a baby is born, are they not automatically insured by the government or a private insurer? No, Bermuda Sand, they're not. This is America. The right wing, the Republican Party, it gets all head up and hot and bothered and worried and concerned and loving about every baby on the planet that is still inside, or well, in the country. On the planet, but in the country in particular. I mean, they love them little unborn babies. But at postpartum, kid, you're on your own. 3. Wow. I haven't done this well on a test in... 3. What is the cost of health care for a family of 4 a month? Damn! I was doing so good. I can tell you that what the cost would be for us, and this is a family of 5. The kinds of coverage that are available range from massive deductibles that cover next to nothing to so-called Cadillac plans. If I was to go out and try to privately purchase insurance for my family, it would likely run somewhere between $2,500 to $5,000 per month minimum. It's a reality. Most people work at wage levels, Bermuda Sand, that do not permit them to participate in an employer-offered health care plan because the copay for the employee would consume the best part, the biggest part of their paycheck. Think people who work at Walmart. You being in Bermuda, maybe you have not been blessed with Walmart yet. Have you? It's the single largest employer in the United States. Millions and millions of people working for maybe $8 an hour. No. Bermuda Sand says, please don't think these are silly questions. I'm just curious. No, those are not silly questions. We would be far better off if a lot of Americans would ask those questions. That's right, Michael, you are. Hammer time. Michael says, I'm in the wrong line of work, Bob. You really are, Michael. You really are. All right, Ron and Raleigh, I know how you are. That's all in it says. Hey, Bob, you know me. Yeah, I do.
Going for the dreams that I have in store in my mind. And I know that I'm making it. I gotta get money, nobody's taking it. I hustle for my muscle, and you look weak, son. Yeah, I'm going for all that I can get. Kicking at the top because I'm too legit to quit saying.
Okay, Ron, I gotta pull the fader up on that one, because if I don't, I'm gonna stop the show and sit down and start writing a parody. And I promise you, you do not want to hear me rap, because I mean we could do a Todd Akin rap with a total cornpone hillbilly accent, and whew, man, wouldn't that be something? It does appear that we are off and running on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, but I want to theme us up a little bit more. Now, many of you have may already have heard this. Robert in Australia just ran across this last night. I hadn't heard it either, because I haven't had much time to watch the program. I don't watch much TV anymore. I just don't. My brain won't let me. But apparently there is some mighty good work being done on a channel which, naturally, most Americans don't get and can't see. Talking about HBO. What I have here is a clip from, is it Aaron Sorkin? From Aaron Sorkin's latest offering called The Newsroom. Features Jeff Daniels as starts out the series as sort of this burned out old Republican news anchor who gets a new producer and suddenly has a change of heart and starts trying to do really do news, and finds out along the way that everything the Republican Party is spewing is a bunch of filthy garbage. In other words, the truth. This clip has particular relevance, though. I watched it last night. The audio will do nicely. You don't have to have the visuals. And I wrote back to Robert after he sent it along. I said, I don't know if you know it or not, but you just wrote tomorrow's show opening. See how you guys contribute even when you don't mean to? I hope you will forgive just a teensy, tiny, itsy, bitsy little bit of hubris on my part. No, it's just plain old pride. Because there are elements of this monologue, and I assure you I had never seen it before last night, that you have heard on this program. Hi, Aaron! I don't know. Probably not. But no, there are elements of this monologue, and the setup is that this is some sort of panel discussion in front of an audience about, and well, you'll hear it. And Jeff Daniels delivers the key
I guess you could call it a rant, couldn't you? Yeah, here we go.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime. And...
Pay attention to what's coming here. I'm going to back this up for just a hair. You've got a liberal, that's the one who says diversity, and you've got, of course, a right-winger, freedom and freedom.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose.
If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose a goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So,
Belgium. That one got you.
207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yet you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Enough. That, of course, from Aaron Sorkin, who gave us The West Wing on NBC, whose latest offering is The Newsroom, which has to be relegated to the ghetto of HBO, which many of us don't get because it costs extra. I've never seen a full episode of The Newsroom because we don't have HBO. So no worries. No worries, America. There aren't going to be that many people who see or hear this kind of thinking, talking, acting, television making. Because it's over there on a four-pay channel, while the rest of us are watching America Has Gas. Or you too could have a new plastic reconstructed nose. Or Ghosts and Ghoulies. Betsy noting, this is totally unrealistic. They're letting him finish a thought. Yeah, because the right winger would be screaming. If he was screaming nothing but freedom! 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 The Newsroom, I think it's on Sunday evenings on HBO. Yeah, see, at first Dr. John said, you have to tell me what this is. I missed where the clip you're playing is from. If it's a movie, I need to see it. But then as soon as I said the title, Dr. John wrote back and said, oh, The Newsroom. Screw that. Not going to buy into the HBO White Privilege Network. No. And, you know, every now and then, I'll throw around the brown word, or somebody will drop an F-bomb. You know, F-bomb has recently entered the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language, that phrase, F-bomb. And we can do that because we're on the Internet. But because the occasional F-bomb gets dropped here, or because Bob occasionally gets frustrated and throws out the brown word, do you realize that every time those words get used would cost us $475,000? The fines went up in the immediate aftermath of Nipplegate and Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl, in which shocked right-wing parents wrote letters to their Congress critters saying, "What will we tell the children? My little precious pumpkin saw a Negro nipple." And so the fines went up. And Howard Stern left for satellite radio. And we sit here with the dreck that generally gets offered up on the over-the-air safe for children to watch networks. You know, the ones with the shows where people get gunned down. The content of what is offered there is brilliant as far as it goes. The statistics are real and verifiable. A pregnant mother has a better chance of surviving the birth of her child in Cuba than she does in the United States. And the baby born has a better chance of surviving in Cuba than in the United States. And you wonder why we do not normalize relationships with that island nation. Eventually, we will normalize relationships with Cuba, but we will do it only after everything in their entire social safety net has been dismantled and sold off to the highest bidder, whether it be Starbucks, McDonald's, or Marriott. Or maybe McDonnell Douglas, or Boeing, or GE, or General Dynamics, or Bechtel, or Halliburton. But then, and only then, will we have a normal, if you can call taking away every last vestige of anything that people have in a country and reserving it unto their corporate masters, if you can call that normal. There is more than a little bit of unreality in that Jeff Daniels soliloquy, monologue, rant. The part where he talks about what we used to do, it's too easy. It is, in a word, facile. At the same time that we were being informed and we were doing those great things, people of color were drinking at different water fountains. Women had no choice but to bear the children that were forced upon them. Gay people lived in closets in fear for their very lives. And in that post-World War II boom generation, that greatest generation, we came to see ourselves as having a global right to drop any amount of munitions upon any people on the planet that we deemed deserved a good killin'. there are in excess of 55,000 names on the Vietnam Wall in Washington, but if we tried to write down the name of every Vietnamese we killed in that benighted conflict, the wall would stretch from the Lincoln Memorial all the way to the Capitol building. Because it is millions of names long. I said at the outset of the Iraq War that when we get around to making the Iraq War monument, after a sufficient number of Iraq War veterans have died, either there or back here from the illnesses, maladies, and madnesses that they brought home with them, that when we get around to building that monument, it should not be a wall. It should be done in the shape of an oil pipeline extending from the crotch of a statue of George W. Bush with a thought bubble coming out of his empty head that says, "He tried to kill my daddy." But while some of that speech is entirely too facile, there are other parts of it that are entirely true. Hey, wow, Bermuda Sand is in the chat room. Welcome! Glad to see you. Chat room's a wonderful and pleasant place to be. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. But that clip is a jumping-off place for where perhaps we will go on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. There's no monologue in this part, and yeah, you do kind of need the video, but let's see if you can guess what this is. Maybe guess where it is simply by hearing it without seeing it.
I'm back.
Step back, bro. Let's get everybody out here.
Back up, please.
Hey, push him back, bro. Get back.
Step back.
I'm on the grass. I'm back. I'm not even nowhere near out there.
You have to move. I'm on public property right here. We just want to make sure you guys don't kill him.
I know this ain't Orange County, but you know what? We're just trying to make sure you don't kill him.
Come on, Martha, back to the stop sign.
Let's go.
guy, really? All of them? Now
I just want to make sure you guys ain't going to fuck them up.
Yeah. They already had them subdued everything, and they just straight bombed on them.
Handcuffs and everything. They bombed.
Ma'am, you gotta wait over there.
My party's over here.
Thank you. Get out of the corner. Thank you. Back to the corner. Thank you. There you go. Watch your step.
Got a pretty good idea what happened? Ronald Weakley Jr. is 20 years old. He's a young man of color. And the Los Angeles Police Department took him down. He's a college student, by the way. The Los Angeles Police Department took him down for skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. Now, what you could not see, but you could hear, was the fact that there were citizens, United States citizens, with video cameras, who captured the event in which Ronald Weakley Jr. was set upon by no less than five members of the Los Angeles Police Department, who drove him to the ground, and at one point, with him on the ground and his head in the grass, punched him in the face for skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. And bear in mind, there were some of those magic words in there that mean that it will not be properly understood in its full context in the for-profit media on the government-censored airwaves of the United States of America. Because, you know, you can say the F-word on HBO, but you can't say it on NBC. Because America's two delicate little ears. Perfect ears. Might somehow be damaged by hearing a word that they probably hear 100 times a day. This is America. This is America in 2012. This is America in 2012 when it takes five police officers to subdue one 20-year-old skateboarder who didn't need subduing in the first place, and no less than three cruisers and more on the way, and a cadre of police officers, Latino, Asian, African-American, white, to push back people from documenting their excesses. Hundreds of people came together today, or last night in L.A., to protest the beating of Ronald Weakley Jr., because, you see, Ronald Weakley Jr. came out of jail. Jail? For skateboarding? On the wrong side of the street? F me running. Skateboarding's a jailing offense now? Locomotion is criminal in this country if you're not using an internal combustion. God almighty. Yeah, he got out of jail with a broken cheekbone, a broken nose, and a concussion. Interviewed by Reuters, he said, "I thought I was going to die. The only thing going through my mind was that I was going to die on my front porch in front of my family and friends." He was at home skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. Isn't an excessive show of force one of those defining characteristics of fascism? Ron in Raleigh writing, wow, a new offense, skateboarding while black. Remember, Bob, white people are the victims of all the racism in America today. Oh, exactly. Ron also noted, we of the Horn family often say they want it all. I have come to the conclusion that a better appellation would be they believe they deserve it all. What do you think? And by the way, yes, I can say this. If you want to see the newsroom, it's out there to be watched. You just got to look around a little bit. They believe they deserve it all. You know, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but I think that is the motivation. But the reality is that they want it all. They want it all. Even the very space in which we move in front of our home. They want it all. Are we clear on that? Certainly hope so. So that brings us to the end, perhaps some will say the merciful end, of the filibobster for this evening. It's time to light up the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, if you want to save us the toll-free freight charges. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Yeah, Irish Dave noting, so video phones are not covered by the Second Amendment, like, you know, swords and stuff that you can carry in your hand, because remember, Fat Tony Scalia, you're right, Dave, Fat Tony Scalia noted that grenade launchers may be legal under the Second Amendment because they are portable. Yeah. So we'll take our top of the hour break. It is Thursday. That means we have Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen to look forward to and the Green News Report. It's on the way. Light up the phones and let's get the conversation started. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday in there. Sticking pretty good. Conversation radio is what we do here. And it's done best. Not by me ranting, but by us conversing. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Preparing for the future means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 23, 2012.
Look, I like wind and solar like the next person, but I don't want the law to be used to stop the production of oil and gas and coal.
The Republican approach is essentially written by or dictated by big oil.
A Green News special report. Mitt Romney's energy agenda. Oil, oil, and more oil. Plus,
we're prepared. We know what the plans are. We have our staff in place. We'll see what Isaac brings.
A hurricane of irony threatens the Republican National Convention in Tampa.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, I can see Obama sending FEMA in advance of the hurricane hitting Tampa. So the Republican convention is nothing but a bunch of tents.
Yes, nothing but a bunch of something.
Make it look like a disaster area before the hurricane even hits there.
Done. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, I think that one thing is clear. God hates the Republican National Convention.
It's quite odd, isn't it?
Yeah, and back in 2008, you may recall, the first day of the convention was scotched after Hurricane Gustav came barreling into Louisiana, and here we are looking down the barrel of Tropical Storm Isaac as it barrels towards Tampa for this Monday to start this year's Republican National Convention.
Oh, the irony. But more on that in a moment. First, just days before the Republican National Convention gets underway in Tampa, Florida.
Maybe.
On Thursday, at a campaign speech in Hobbs, New Mexico, presumptive GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney unveiled his energy agenda, which focuses, not surprisingly, on more oil, gas, and coal, promising, quote, energy independence for North America by 2020.
By 2020, we won't need to buy any oil from the Middle East or Venezuela or anywhere else, where we don't want to.
Romney's energy plan reads like a wish list for the oil industry, focusing on more drilling everywhere. He loosens environmental regulations, aggressively expands offshore drilling, even forcing it on states that don't want it. He opens up ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, to oil drilling and expands drilling on federal public lands, except he puts the states in charge instead of federal oversight. Romney keeps billions in annual taxpayer subsidies for the oil industry, but cuts subsidies for the clean energy industry, including the crucial wind energy production tax credit that expires at the end of this year.
That is very popular, by the way, with Republicans and Republican governors around the country.
Yes, and that's because states like Iowa and Colorado have very strong wind energy industries. Romney's plan for North American energy independence is based on relying on Canada.
Canada has oil sands. We're going to take advantage of those and build that Keystone Pipeline and work with Canada to make sure we have advantage of their great energy sources.
Of their really heavy, sticky, disgusting, dirty oil sands. And by the way, I thought he was in favor of energy independence, but he's relying on countries like Canada and Mexico?
Yes, and that's the slippery language that he's using. When he says North American energy independence, he really means dependence on foreign oil from Canada, not homegrown American energy sources like wind and solar. He barely even mentioned clean energy, except to say he would kill the successful federal loan guarantee program for clean energy companies and would end any federal policy that boosts renewables over oil.
Look, I like wind and solar like the next person. But I don't want the law to be used to stop the production of oil and gas and coal. I want to promote energy innovation. I don't want the government investing in companies. I want instead to have our government investing in basic science and research.
Investing in science and research, unless that science and research concerns renewable energy like wind and solar. Apparently.
Basically, yes. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney criticized Romney's energy plan for focusing exclusively on fossil fuels.
What distinguishes the president's all-of-the-above approach to our energy future is that the Republican approach is essentially written by or dictated by big oil, and focuses almost entirely on oil and fossil fuels.
And that they aggressively pursue nuclear energy, imaginary clean coal, and so forth. Just to be fair, there's a lot of nonsense written into the Obama energy policy as well.
Yes, but also to be fair, Carney noted that President Obama's policies have doubled renewable energy production in the U.S., and he's also expanded domestic production of oil. Even oil billionaire T. Boone Pickens blasted Romney's plan on MSNBC.
All they talk about is oil. Oil, drill off the East Coast, West Coast, federal lands, everything.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
Of course, the one thing Romney didn't even mention, climate change.
What climate change?
Exactly. Speaking of climate change, also on its way to the Republican National Convention in Tampa is Tropical Storm Irony. Tropical Storm Isaac.
Very good.
Now in the Caribbean, forecast models predict that Isaac could hit Florida as a hurricane on Monday or Tuesday, the opening day of the RNC, unless it veers away. City officials are taking it very seriously because a worst-case scenario shows storm surge would drown the Tampa Convention Center under 20 feet of water. But the unspoken issue here is that a widespread evacuation of Tampa, like most metropolitan areas, would be, shall we say, extremely difficult.
Wow. Fingers crossed, hoping for the best down there in Tampa. For more on that story as it develops and all of the other ones we didn't have time to cover today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to keep telling you the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I have to give the time because they drummed me out of the worn-out, tired old DJ's union if I didn't. Oh, mercy. Willard Romney says he wants to invest in basic science. Well, okay, Willard. How about getting on board with the AIC Act, H.R. 5959, that would invest in some basic science to find out why the coal industry, how the coal industry, the mountaintop removal industry in particular, is poisoning people who live near mountaintop removal sites. That's very basic science. That's really not simple, but yeah, basic. Can we, Willard? No, I didn't think you'd get on board. Your masters would not like that. Willard, does Bain Capital and the money you make, does Bain have any coal money? Would somebody look into that, pretty please? Thanks. Jeez. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, you know, I would chat a little bit to you, but to be honest, I was calling because I'm at my poverty wage job, and I'm wondering if you could put me on hold so I can listen to the show. I'm obnoxious, I know.
No, that's not obnoxious. You are far from the first to ever do that, Sandra, and I'm more than happy to do it.
Okay, well, anyway, listen, that bit you played, wow, in L.A., really out of control, the pigs. You know that police brutality is like the engine of social unrest in this country. You know, when King was assassinated, people were like, oh, they're rioting. But the reason the riots really happened was just the wrong history of police brutality. And that was just sort of a cataclysmic sort of event.
That was the match to the fuse, exactly.
Right, and it's the same thing happening again. It's just like lessons are never learned. I mean, this shit. Only go on, you know, and when you see it explode, remember, it's the pigs attacking regular folks and poor people and mainly people of color. It can't go on forever. I mean, people will get tired of it. And, you know, Anaheim, you see that. L.A. is always a tinderbox. I mean, it's just, I'm sort of gobsmacked by the plan is always the same, you know?
Well, it is. And, you know, hey, let's give L.A., the LAPD credit. You know, they've gone for diversity in their department now. So it's not just white folks beaten on persons of color. They've co-opted the various communities to make sure that there's a recognizable face doing the beating.
Well, then that's the little Eichmann, you know, that's totalitarianism 101. So we're beyond the face of the fascists are all sorts of color, and especially in America, that sort of would be uniquely American fascist, wouldn't it?
Level. Yeah, uniquely American. And see, there's this generational thing, Sandra. Is anybody thinking? I mean, I know that on some sort of subconscious Freudian level, the lily white GOP is motivated toward probably 99% of its actions because it knows way down deep in its little lizard brain, it knows that white folks are not going to be the majority for a hell of a lot much longer. And what happens when we're not?
Well, that's why I think that the rapid, you know, along with removing trillions of dollars out of the country, literally, and this sort of effort to dismantle what's left of government services from the city on up, is half a response to the pending demographic change. I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, all laid out by design. But this country has always had a history of, you know, from the Homestead Act to affirmative action, you know, when it's not directed towards white people, it becomes a problem. But up until then, all the help from government is fine. It's only when it changes color, then all of a sudden it has to be ended. I mean, you hear the Republicans, they're always going on about, well, we're not going to touch you if you're over 60, 55. You know what that means.
Oh,
because most of them
isn't that class warfare in and of itself?
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's not like, you know, I don't know what the percentage of that cohort is of color, but trust me, majority of them are white because unfortunately, you know, people of color work so damn hard they keel over before it's time to collect.
Sad but true.
I'm kind of being facetious. You know, my mother has, you know, she gets all whatever is available for herself. So I probably shouldn't be so disingenuous. But you get the idea.
Oh yes, I do, and I don't think it's statistically inaccurate either.
But I'm just so sick of every. You know, it really seems to be accelerating the sort of pig gone wild stories. I mean, it's just out of control now, don't you think?
Well, it is, and you counter it. You counter it, I guess, or contrast it, I think, would be the more appropriate word, with stories like that thing out of Louisiana, where the sheriff's deputies go knock on a door, and a bunch of skinhead white folks open up with semi-automatic weapons through the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're paranoid, the white folks are paranoid, and folks of color can't skateboard. I mean, really, I mean, Ron and Raleigh nailed it. You know, skateboarding while black is a crime now?
No, and when you do get an example of some black person with a gun, they're shot up 40 times, like that poor grandmother. Remember her?
Oh, yeah, in Atlanta.
And they shot her dead, and she was just sitting in a chair.
Well, dude with a knife in Saginaw, Michigan the other night?
Yep, and the guy in Times Square, he had a knife, too. So,
yeah.
The police apparatus is too much.
Well, it's fascism. It just is. I mean, I don't know at what point we have to have. I mean, we're using the word here. I know it's being used on other programs as well. At what point does the for-profit media give us permission to use the word?
Well, I thought that was really who commented they don't want to be bothered with white privilege HBO.
Oh, that was Dr. John.
Well, I mean, and it's also very infantile, but I think it just sort of goes with the plan of the powers that be, you know, that, like you said, you can gun down people nightly on TV, but, you know, the words that you and I and everybody else use daily is somehow not okay. I think it's just another mode of social control.
Sure it is.
And it's so
and let's, you know, let's remember, and you know this well because, you know, you've been across the pond, Sandra. This is not necessarily the case in the rest of the civilized world. You can say certain words on television in Great Britain, in Australia, in Japan, in New Zealand, in Germany, Italy, France, what have you. But because this country is, and maybe that's the thing we haven't quite, and I'm guilty too, I talk about they want a theocracy, but when you've got a country that can't even allow the speech of the common people onto the common people's public airwaves, then don't you already have a de facto theocracy? Because that's what is driving this. That's what drove the wardrobe malfunction hissy. All those right-wing legislators who were shocked by the side of a breast.
No, but it's so true. If you want to pay the $20 a month for HBO, you know, you can hear all that you want and see all the titties that you want. But it's just on ABC, for some reason, you know, you can't. Yeah, I just think that is, you know, by design, like you're saying, it just appeals to, I don't know, it's just really infantile, though, you know. It's sort of like, you know, I don't know, I can't pronounce the guy's name, Tasha somebody from the Atlanta Monthly, the black writer who writes there.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote this long piece about, you know, the irony of the black president. And, I mean, it's a really long article. It's very interesting. But one thing that he talked about was, you know, how infantile it is to deal with white folks, basically, which is why Obama is just on eggshell permanently. Now, he wasn't making an excuse for him, but he was just pointing out the long history of shuffling and yes-a-bossing that has gone along with how whites and blacks deal. And why would that change when you have a president?
Well, isn't there, and you know, here in 2012, isn't there a relatively popular song that's out there, Every Day I Be Shuffling?
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, it's a takeoff from Ross, the rapper from Florida, Every Day I'm Hustling.
Yeah.
He just turned around to that. I mean, the Every Day I'm Hustling song is a bit different than them idiots talking about I'm sexy, but I get what you're saying. I
mean, I think we still, you know, the first thing I thought of when I saw the story of this young man being beaten within an inch of his life for being on a skateboard on the sidewalk was, you know, one, this is L.A., and we know that the L.A. cops have a history of brutality, but still, there's a lot of us progressives, liberals in other parts of the country that kind of look to California as some sort of hopeful future, but that's a stirring, stunning reminder that, no, it ain't what, you know, it ain't what it's cracked up to be all over. But the other thing that got me was, well, son of a gun, it's a skateboard step-off rule, isn't it? I mean, if there'd been skateboards in Mississippi in 1950, wouldn't that have been part of the step-off rule?
I mean, California, you know, they're notorious for the police acting up. I mean, and they keep changing. I mean, the latest program here that's got me really disturbed is, you know how the court said you got to depopulate the prison because there's too many people here?
Yeah.
In prison? Well, Jerry Brown has decided, well, we're going to put all those people into the county jail. So the jails are, like, you know, filling up, and he still needs to reduce it by another 12,000, and he's balking at that. But, and so you have the L.A. jail, which is, I think it's the biggest jail in the country. Well, it's gotten, like, about, you know, 1,100 people bigger. And, I mean, that's, you know, that's the model that, you know, when you look to California, you're seeing now. I mean, they're not releasing these people like they should. They're just finding other areas to pack them in so they can satisfy the court order. But they're not.
Yeah, and meanwhile, down in Tampa, I think I mentioned this talking with Juanita last night or the night before. The mayor of Tampa has ordered an entire jail cleared out to hold nothing but people who dare to protest at the RNC, and they said straight out, yeah, we're not going to tolerate much more than chanting and sign waving. So,
well, and I mean, so and what the regular public is sitting around saying, yeah, make sure you're tough on those people. I mean, is that where we're at now?
I would suspect that's probably true, Sandra.
Well, yeah, and you have that. I mean, you know,
because we've got a nation of Archie Bunkers out there now.
Yeah, a lot of scared people, I think.
Yeah.
And then you have, my favorite is that horrible sheriff, I guess, is speaking at the convention from Arizona. I mean,
they gave wait, stop. They gave Arpaio a speaking slot?
Yeah, I saw that empty wheel had tweeted that. And I just thought, well, they really want that Latino vote. They're working hard. So it makes me think that is the fix really in, because this war on women, you know, fuck the Latinos, and on and on and on. I mean, who are they going to get to vote for? I'm really trying to figure it out. Do you know?
White folks and their votes count four for everybody else. Is this the year we're going to see the formal rejuvenation of the three-fifths rule, Sandra?
Well, I'm just wondering because, see, I just don't see, if you're looking at normal political activities, would say Obama in a landslide. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But their platform is like the Taliban, and they hate brown people, and it's just on and on and on. So, in reality, they should get very few votes. So,
I mean, what was it, 2-3 days ago, Paul Ryan actually went on TV on KDKA in Pittsburgh and reaffirmed that he supports a personhood amendment.
Yeah, he actually owned up to it, really?
Yeah, I got the audio right here.
Yeah, so I'm trying to understand, well, what do they know that we don't? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's not paranoia. That's just straight up trying to understand the process. And I think you and I probably know the answer. what they know is that these voter suppression laws are going to have a profound impact. You know, it doesn't matter. He didn't need Marco Rubio because he can dummy up the results with the video game voting in Florida. It's going to be suppressed in Pennsylvania. It's going to be suppressed in Alabama. It's going to be Go ahead.
Oh no. So yeah, I have to keep asking myself because I don't know if you get a chance, just read the bit of the platform dealing with reproductive rights. I mean, you'll be running screaming. I know I was. I mean, it's a horror show.
Well, I mean, yeah, it includes there's no rape and incest exception.
Right.
All women must carry all babies to term.
And the wand, you know, they're all talking about, you know, anything to put a roadblock by these states, you know, all that. It's incredible. I guess I'm going to watch some of the convention just as a train wreck type thing because I can't believe all the different people they have speaking, the horror show.
Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a late addition isn't this creepy judge out of Texas. You know about him, right?
Oh, God, what's the deal? What did he do?
Judge Tom Head. No, his name really is Head. I don't know if his campaign slogan is "Give me head" or "Give us head," but you know, Judge Tom Head of Lubbock County, Texas, has said on Fox 34, which is one of the news channels down there. Naturally, it's Fox. He's going to talking about President Obama, of course. He's going to try to hand over the sovereignty of the United States to the UN, and what is going to happen when that happens? I'm thinking the worst: civil unrest, civil disobedience, civil war, maybe. And we're not just talking a few riots here and there, demonstrations. We're talking Lexington Concord, take up arms and get rid of the guy. Now, what's going on?
I heard that. I'm thinking, shouldn't he have a knock on the door about right now? What's the hold up?
Well, you said a couple of minutes ago, Sandra, Barack Obama's walking around on eggshells.
Well, I know, but it's just like, you know, how many times have we heard stuff that if they had said about Bush, they would have rounded up folks?
Yeah, and they did.
That poor lady from the Dixie Chick, they probably destroyed their career.
Well, they threatened to kill them.
Yeah, plus, and he had radio stations not playing their music. I mean, economically attacking them, politically attacking them, the whole nine yards, yet we have this Hank Williams, I mean, saying God knows what about Obama, and it's just kind of like, I guess it's...
That's why I keep talking, trying to talk about these things. Now, naturally, Judge Head says, onward to dystopia, noting in the chat room, he says, it sounds like this judge has been listening to Alex Jones. Yes, it does.
Blew you in. Because they don't know anything about, trust me, the UN, they don't know nothing about the UN unless they listen to Alex Jones. They're certainly not reading textbooks on it.
No, yeah, but you know where all this UN stuff is coming from, right, Sandra? I mean, you know. It's Agenda 21.
Well, I don't even know what Agenda 21 is. You know, it's completely benign. I can't believe how they've contorted that for paper, but anyway.
Yeah, well, it only looks benign. This is how they're going to take our sovereignty. And so you've got the sovereign citizen movement. You've got the Republican Party of Virginia calling for armed revolution on, what, November 7th, if they don't get Romney in. You've got this goon in Lubbock, Texas, swearing that he's ready to dig the trenches and roll out the razor wire to make sure that the Obama's UN troops can't take Lubbock. I mean, Jesus, what's next? I mean, am I gonna fire up the computer one morning and find some right wing idiot standing on a mountain screaming Wolverines? You know, like it's Red Dawn or something.
Well, I don't really know, but I know my black ass is gonna be inside on inaugural day. I'm not feeling the oh, yay, Obama's president anymore. You know, that ship has sailed, and it's time to hunker down.
Yeah, no kidding. It's frightening.
You know,
yeah.
I'm being a bit facetious. I mean, I hope it's not getting to that point, but...
No, but I mean, consider, not that I'm trying to make myself some sort of poster child, consider where I am. You think I'm wearing me an Obama t-shirt down to get me a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter? Oh, hell no!
Well, I had been and scraped off shit on my car, you know, because it's just too much. It's too many crazies out there. But listen, that bitch you played from the newsroom, you know, there was, some of it was good, but, you know, that also falls under the sort of infantilization of everything, because what is he talking about when we used to do this, that, another, and
right.
You laid it out what the problem was with that whole speech, but I don't know, I mean, I hear that show is pretty good, I always...
Well, it's Aaron Sorkin, and he doesn't know how to do bad TV.
Oh, no, I was, you know...
Yeah, this is the West Wing moved into a newsroom.
Yeah, I think I've seen every episode of West Wing. Funny how the West Wing was on NBC, though. You know that? You know what I'm saying?
And the right wing hated it.
Oh, God, they hated it, but it was still on. But whereas now you get Stars and Stripes shoot up a people, or whatever show that is, that's just horrific, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, there's been an ownership change in the interim. You know, what is it, what cable company owns Comcast owns NBC now? So,
no, but this show, the Strike, whatever the military show with, what's that general that's doing it? Wesley Clark, and they got celebrities pretending that they're, you know, at war. It's just horrifying. I can't believe that show is on.
Well, again, you know, that's just another little check mark box for me on my list of are we fascist yet?
Yeah, you definitely can add that in. Like you said, you know, not watching much TV. I know I'm right there with you. It's sad, but it's so true. Well, anyway.
Well, I do have to tell you, I got to tell you before you go that there's at least a little bit of good news. Agnes and I were listening to the radio in the car the other day. And we heard some NPR report about Paul Ryan talking to some a group of, you know, white folks who cling to God, their guns and their religion up in Pennsylvania. And, of course, that I mentioned that because that phrase was brought out, you know, because there was the Ryan soundbite was, well, I just want you to know I'm a Catholic deer hunter. And I didn't know if that meant he only hunts Catholic deer. Or maybe he kills Protestant deer, or he's a Catholic who hunts deer. God only knows what that meant. But he entered the room, Sandra, to the strains of Dee Snider screaming, "We're not gonna take it," you know, and the drum beat and everything, Twisted Sister. And Agnes looks at me and goes, "Well, I figure the Romney Ryan campaign will be getting a letter from Dee in about 10, 9, 8, 7. And so lo and behold, I called her in here yesterday before showtime. I said, "You were right, honey." Because the letter had gone out from Dee Snider to the Romney Ryan campaign. Quit using my effing song. I hate your effing guts.
Listen,
okay, he didn't say that, but it was a little nicer, but that was the upshot.
Well, I'm still trying to Google his ex-black girlfriend. That's what I want to know about.
Well, and apparently there's a mixed marriage somewhere in his immediate family. But see, that's credibility. You know, no, see, we don't hate the dark-skinned people. Our vice presidential nominee once dated one. You know, that's like some of my best friends are, right?
No, I mean, that's why I tweeted, well, my college sweetheart was a really white dude, but I'm still a racist bitch.
Jesus, you're awful. You know that.
At any rate, listen, you going to put me on hold?
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. No, okay. We'll put you on hold. Stand by, Sandra. Thanks. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye. Sandra, on the job and calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hi, this is Harry in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Harry. Good to hear from you again, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You're very kind. As you know, I think this is only my second time talking with you, and I appreciate you taking my call.
No thanks at all needed. I appreciate you making it, believe me.
Oh, well, thank you. And I even called in on your non-toll-free line. So I hopefully, I don't know if that actually, does that actually save you money?
Yeah. It means it means that we're not racking up 6 cents a minute.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I'm glad I did that. I'm happy to do it. Without discounting, you know, or dismissing any of the issues that you've brought up tonight and that that have been brought up by your callers and people in the chat room, I was very struck by some things you said at the very beginning of the show. And, well, first of all, let me say I'm a big fan of The Princess Bride, very big fan.
I just love it.
I do, too. And, in fact, I must confess that when I'm feeling very down and depressed about what's going on in society, I actually watch the movie because for some reason it just, I don't know, it seems to uplift me at times. You know, there's something about the...
Well, the cast was magic.
Yeah.
The storyline is classic, and the performances were simply flawless.
yes. And of course, William Goldman is just a wonderful writer and screenwriter, so it's hard to beat. But, you know, there's also something really sort of almost idealistic even in the humor in there, you know, about loyalty and commitment. And it's, you know, and of course, you know, the bad guys,
yeah,
you know, getting defeated by their own, you know, foolishness and arrogance in the end. So.
Oh, that's, and of course, that's a classic theme that begins with the ancient Greeks and comes forward.
Yes. Well, yes. You're probably right. Well, you probably know that better than I do. But yes, I think that's you're absolutely right about that. I also was struck, you know, what you were saying in the beginning, and maybe people don't want, you know, this is sort of a more broader issue, you know, about frankly, you were talking about the 1%, frankly, you know, wanting it all, and you were emphasizing the all, and. I, you know, and this is not the first time that you've talked about that, but this is something, you know, that personally really does hit me very strongly. And I, you know, I've had some personal experiences recently, and again, I certainly don't want to get too maudlin for your audience or people in the chat room. But
I'll let you know if the maudlin meter goes off, Harry. You just go, man.
I appreciate it because, you know, and frankly, I've had some wonderful experiences interacting with people in the chat room, and
we're having, by the way, some technical difficulties in there. People keep getting booted. There's something wrong with the system. It's
weird. Well, I'm sorry to hear, but I guess why I mentioned that is because I know that there are some people in the chat room, you know, who when their style of dealing with their frustration is to be, frankly, very sort of sharp and witty in a very you know, either satirical or sarcastic way, and I'm more, unfortunately, sort of more introverted and introspective, and so I, you know, get kind of, I sort of get upset by being contemplative and worrying.
Yeah, I understand. I do my fair share of that too, Harry.
Right. So when I, you know, get upset, I'm sort of always more thinking in perhaps even in a more too dry kind of a way, I mean, even a sort of a cerebral way about, you know. You know, what is going on? And
well, lucky for you, this is a place that does cerebral, so, you know, don't be afraid.
Well, I must tell you, no, I think you do cerebral extremely well. I'm always in awe of your knowledge and, you know, your overall erudition. It is just truly impressive. But what I wanted to mention was, and let me just start here with, I recently was, had been doing some research into, and I'm not sure how, well, anyway, into this whole, you know, what is going on in society in terms of the 1% and this terrible greed, you know, factor that you were mentioning and how these people seem to want it all. And, you know, I certainly think, you know, and the problem is that we're not just talking about, you know, they want it all from, let's say, you know, the, I don't know, you know, the people who are the most vulnerable, let's say the working class. But, you know, and I think you may have mentioned this last night in your show, but, you know, this new Pew report saying that the middle class has lost lots of ground just since 2000 is truly, well, it's troubling, but also it confirms, you know, what I myself have been certainly, you know, experiencing in my own life and in the people I know around here, you know, and I live here in Washington, D.C., which supposedly, you know, is supposed to be having a better economy than other regions in the country. And, you know, yet But the problem is, you know, if you have a whole middle class, or, you know, the way the Pew Center report said it, that basically, you know, they're losing ground in, you know, assets, and I'm not sure what else. I haven't read the report, but it basically was
saying, they say it was the worst decade for the middle class, ever?
Yes, exactly. That's right, ever. And that's, you know, and boy, that you know, if you step back and think about it, that is really, really troubling. You know, I mean, there's something really disturbing about that.
And well, I have to share this because it's breaking news, Harry.
Yeah.
This just came across one of the platforms that I monitor. Maybe other people already know this, but I'm just looking at a headline and I don't have the background on it. But damn, this looks interesting. 950 pages of Romney's Bain Capital records have been leaked.
A bombshell or a big old bust?
Wow. Well,
yeah.
That will be fascinating. Certainly in the next few days. Yeah, I think everybody will on our side of things will be fascinated. If not, you know, disgusted, but certainly fascinated.
Well, it will be genuinely interesting to see if there's anything there. And of course,
yeah.
The first thing I have to think about is, gee, I wonder if Anonymous has been at work. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy if they have been.
Well,
he won't release his tax returns? Okay, well, Anonymous will.
Yeah. Yes, I think he has been reticence personified. I'm being polite, of course. But I don't understand. I mean, yeah. Well, I won't even go there because I think it's so, for him to act as if he doesn't have to and there's nothing there, you know, I mean, it just gets less and less credible by the month.
Right, and Mrs. Romney isn't helping. You know, we've given you people all you need.
Yeah. Yes, no, she's, I think she needs to step back a little. But what I wanted to start out with anyway, and I'm not going to try to redo this, is I know that you are a very big student of history. And I recently, in trying to think about, you know, what was going on, I realized that I had an old copy of a book written, at least the last edition, written in the 50s by at that time, a well-known historian, Richard Hofstadter.
Yes, I know the name.
Yes, and I think his big book was called something like The Political Tradition in America or something like that. He also wrote a book which a lot of people, I gather, at the time thought was a real treasure, which was called Social Darwinism and American Thought. And he basically, what he was doing was analyzing the very prominent surge of social Darwinism actually in America, not in Great Britain, but in America, that had been sort of exported from Great Britain after Darwin came out with his first book about theory of evolution, which was, I think, the first book was 1859. And apparently in the decades after that, up through about the First World War, there was this really virulent kind of, you know, social Darwinism, which is to say, you know, the idea that we should apply evolutionary theory to people and that therefore, you know, life is a competition. And Hofstadter in this book basically said, you know, first of all, I mean, he really analyzed the whole thing and talked about the people in the United States, the intellectuals who were pushing this theory, and what he basically concluded was that really, that there was nothing really in Darwinism itself that he said, you know, that made it basically, as he put it, an apology for force or competition, but he said that American society basically saw its own image in this kind of, you know, what was originally seen as this kind of very competitive, aggressive, to-the-death kind of version of natural selection. And but what really struck me was what he said in his concluding chapter. And because he'd already basically said that, you know, there was a lot of things that were unique about the late 1800s that, you know, brought in this kind of really virulent social Darwinism. But then he said, and I am quoting from the book, he said, "A resurgence of social Darwinism, either in its individualist or imperialist uses, is always possible so long as there is a strong element of predacity in society." And, you know, and predacity, you know, means predatory, related to predatory.
I was guessing. I have to confess.
It's apparently, it's a usage probably that no one uses anymore. I had to look it up myself, but it's basically, you know, means...
Because I would say predatorialism or predatory conduct.
Right.
Or,
exactly. Yeah. And it's probably not used anymore.
It's the same structural form as saying sagacity.
Yeah.
For, you know, someone who is a sage.
Yes. You got it. So, you know, and I began to think, well, you know, and he at the time in the 50s had apparently, you know, in the book he says that, well, you know, there's enough forces of what he called humanism, you know, to basically sort of push back any kind of, you know, need for or any kind of motivation for social Darwinism. But, you know, that was the 50s. And when I read that, and then, when he talked about predacity, you know, I thought about all the kind of predatory capitalism, hypercapitalism we're talking about now. And I do worry, you know, that this is...
Is there an argument to be made, do you think, Harry, that what we witness in these manifestations of predatory capitalism is a form of social Darwinism at work? And to be fair, I'm not entirely comfortable with the term social Darwinism.
Because, well, I'm not either. Well, it's an old term, and it's
an extrapolation of Darwin's theories in The Origin of Species onto
right.
things that Darwin had no business and did not necessarily approve of it being extrapolated upon.
Oh no! In fact, no. Darwin, in fact, you know, Darwin did not approve of it at all. And in fact, you know, there's a phrase attributed to Darwin that, in fact, was not said by Darwin at all, which was, now I'm blocking it out, but there's a famous phrase that is associated with social Darwinism that he never said. In fact, it was Herbert Spencer, who was a social scientist in Great Britain, who basically, competition of the fittest? I'm sorry, the...
Survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest, right. Apparently Darwin never said that. So, no, I agree. I mean, of course, there have been, you know, as you know, there have been some evolutionary-type theories that have, you know, sort of been successors to social Darwinism, like in the 70s, you know, what was called sociobiology was considered a successor to social Darwinism.
Right, and there's even, and Dr. John and I have had exchanges about this. There is a dangerous, at least if I'm restating Dr. John correctly, there's a dangerous tendency in some of the social sciences to think that, and we saw this, for instance, in that British study that came out that said right-wingers have bigger amygdalas. You know, lizard brain.
Right.
It's more than a little bit dangerous, Harry, for us to look at that and say, well, okay, then, you know, genetics and biology explain why these people are shitbirds.
Yes, right.
We do that at our peril because there are elements of so-called social Darwinistic tendencies within that. Because if we can't, you know, if we are merely creatures of our genetics, then, you know, what the hell? We're just going to do what we do, and there's not a lot of help or hope. But we know that environment plays a part. We know that.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I think you may be referring, well, at least in part, to this new field in psychology called evolutionary psychology, which is, in fact, a kind of a successor to social Darwinism in the sense that they do use evolution and evolutionary theory to explain psychological phenomena like mating and morality.
And you know, but that's the thing. I think we can concede, Harry, that there's a mix. For instance, in reproductive issues, there are cues that people respond to one way or another, regardless of how they're wired in terms of sexuality, that we respond to visual and audio and all kinds of sensory cues, and that maybe that's hardwired in the genome, but it's also, you know, there are also environmental mitigators, if you will. But let me back us up real quick and get back to that question. is the predatory capital that we see, capitalism that we see today, is there an argument that it has social Darwinistic over or undertones?
I think, well, and first of all, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, I think credible social scientists say that there are lots of different factors, you know, other than genes. I mean, there's environment, there's even luck and chance. I mean, there are lots of things going on. Yeah. But as you said, you're asking me for the argument. I think, well, here's what I would say, I guess, and this is just, you know, off the cuff. I think there's a texture or a tone to what people are saying that worries me, yes. I heard a clip, and I don't know where it's from, but it was on another progressive radio show, and it was a clip of Sheldon Adelson basically saying, and I think it was at some fundraiser or something, where he basically says that he only talks to rich people because only rich people, if you're smart, you're going to become rich. And so he only wants to talk to rich people because those are the only smart people.
Wow, that's not Darwinism. That's Calvinism.
Yeah, right. Well, but the idea, I think anything that, in a sense, you know, poses the idea that, or proposes the idea that certain people, you know, are basically more evolutionary, you know, are superior in some ways, you know, either through intelligence or something else. I think that sort of verges on, you know, what used to be called social Darwinism. Because even Ayn Rand, I think, you know, some of her ideas, so to speak.
Well, you're flinging that word idea around kind of loosely, aren't you, Harry?
Yes, I am. In scare quotes. I think a lot of this does have a tinge of, you know, that kind of thinking, that somehow, you know, these people are superior because they're wealthy or because they are part of the elite or whatever. And that I find very scary. Yeah, I think that's very dangerous and also leads people to, in a sense, you know, it sort of leads to kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, I suppose, if anybody believes it. And
there we go back to what I mentioned a few nights ago about the Tinkerbell theory of the Constitution.
I may have missed that.
Any little kid who's ever been taken to see the stage version of Peter Pan,
right,
knows that Tinkerbell dies in the end.
Yes.
And the audience has to clap like mad and believe in Tinkerbell. Because, you know, you never see Tinkerbell during the entire course of the program.
Right.
It's not like the cute little Disney movie where she's, you know, this little,
right.
You know, this little inch-high blonde hottie.
Yes.
you know, she's invisible and she's manifested by, you know, the very highest note on the piano or xylophone or whatever.
Ding-a-ling.
Yes. And you have to clap to show that you believe, and you know, things like judicial systems function only so long as the people in a civil society afford them credibility.
Yes.
And so I think you're bringing some of that into play as well, not necessarily on the judicial end, but within the context of what you just mentioned.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that's fair to say. Yeah. Well, I think it also brings up issues which, to me, are related to social Darwinism in terms of the so-called meritocracy, our meritocracy, and whether we actually have one or whether it's been completely corrupted or, in fact, maybe was a rigged game to begin with.
See, I'm opting for C, rigged game to begin with.
Yeah, well, right. And, I think that's a real possibility. I mean, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and those are the, you know, that was sort of the time when things like, you know, the SAT were very important. But also, that was before, you know, people started really dissecting and criticizing the SAT, so and IQ tests. So there was this belief somehow that these things had real objective, you know, meaning in terms of judging an individual's, you know, either scholastic aptitude or I don't know, even just native intellectual aptitude or whatever. And I think that is a problem as well, because, you know, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, you receive a number and, you know, you're told that this is, you know, your worth or your value. And, you know, that to me is related to this whole idea of people who are rich, you know, the idea that they believe, as, you know, we keep hearing, that they have more value, or, you know, they sometimes inadvertently admit that, you know, like the woman who went to that fundraiser in the Hamptons. And I don't remember that.
Yes.
They were waiting in line, and there was some woman who explained that the people she employed, like her maid, et cetera, didn't really understand, you know, what was going on in the country. And
right, and there's that underpinning of elitism that goes with that says not only do they not understand, it is presupposed that people are incapable of understanding.
Yes, that's right. They cannot, because it's...
Whereas if you actually educate the populace, then you see the great flowering of American genius that you had, you know, beginning with the progressive era at the front end of the 20th century. That while, you know, like what Sandra and I were talking about, while it was deeply flawed with people living in closets and race codes and apartheid and you know, just massive misogyny, it was a striding forward. Charles Pierce over at Esquire wrote a brilliant essay some while back on the Morrill, M-O-R-R-I-L-L acts, which were the acts that came about in the Congress during, not after, but during, you know, 1862 was the first one, during the Civil War, after the South and its entrenched elitist ways had absented themselves from the conversation. And the Morrill Act is what created the state land-grant institutions that allowed that flowering of intellect by creating state universities and creating spaces in which people, you know, the hoi polloi, could go and learn, where, you know, a miller's son could go and become a doctor, or a shoemaker's daughter could go and become, at the time, I mean, there were limited opportunities, a nurse or a teacher, or, you know, in some cases, even a scientist. That's how that happened.
Yes,
And now we're in some sort of retrograde motion, Harry, in which a decision has been made. And it's bothered me since we started talking about this in the Clinton administration, and it bothered me even more during the Bush administration, and the fact that the Obama administration has bought into it too, this idea of we've got to get more people into higher education, but the way we're going to do that is we're going to create two-year community colleges that are going to essentially serve as trade schools for the early 20-somethings.
Yeah, well, that's...
You know, education is not, and this is in, I don't want to come across as some sort of a snob, I am not. You know what? I wish I could hang drywall. I wish, I, as a teenager, I roofed houses. I don't remember anything about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And painted walls and so forth. I wish I was a competent electrician or a plumber, and instead, I'm none of these things. I'm not even a jack of all trades and master of none. I'm a clown of all trades, where things like that are concerned, and it gets me into terrible, terrible, terrible trouble.
Well,
so I don't mean to... diminish the importance of manual skills. That's not my point. But to suggest that the answer for this country is to ignore the life of the mind and simply pigeonhole the great majority of our young, that the answer is to pigeonhole them into, you're going to be a data entry professional. You're going to be this, you're going to be that, and view the educational system as nothing but trade school, absent any of the great classics, and liberal arts that yielded up this nation of brilliant people, is to miss the idea altogether, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and in fact, I think it's shameful, to be quite honest. I think it's just totally shameful. And it also, in fact, even, I think, corrupts the, even the, you know, sort of theory, or I mean just the theory of education and, you know, what education is supposed to be about. In fact, I was thinking about, and again, I apologize for getting too much into the books here, but there is a, now he's near retirement, a very, very eloquent sociologist named Richard Sennett, who is probably best known actually for a book he wrote when he was very young in the 60s called The Hidden Injuries of Class. He co-wrote that with another person. And he's been interviewing workers now, I guess, for the last several decades. That's basically what he, in a sense, does in terms of sociology research. And he recently wrote a book called The Craftsman, and then another book called, I think, The New Culture of Capitalism. And one of the things that he says, and the reason why he wrote a whole book on craftsmanship, is because he points out that one of the things about craftsmanship is that there's a certain, well, for, there are two things. First of all, there's a certain continuity in the sense that you can start as a novice and keep going and keep going. And the second is that you don't have to be perfect and be the ideal worker right away. In fact, there's room to improve and to learn, and then in the end, in a sense, to be a sort of a veteran craftsman and in a sense have a wisdom to impart. And he's saying we're losing that, among other things. But that's one of the things he says, because of this, the way in which, let's say, predatory hypercapitalism, you know, is always looking for the short term, always looking not to give any worker a sense of security or, you know, the fact that they have some idea that they're going to be moving forward in their jobs. And he's saying, you know, all of this is even, you know, just corrupting the whole idea of work. And I think that relates, and the reason I mention it is because I think it does relate to the idea of education, because you know, education is not just, you know, a number you get on the SAT. I mean, it's a process, and a process that can continue, you know, for a long time.
Well, you know, you're opening dozens, literally dozens, Harry, of doors of inquiry here.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, no. Don't apologize. Don't apologize at all. I mean, because this is the kind of progressual thinking that we have to engage in. There are circular problems tend to be the most, the ones most replete with deviltry, because it's hard to break the circle anywhere that, you know, anywhere you intrude in a circular problem, you've got another, yeah. You've got one problem in front of you and one problem at your back.
Yes, you are correct, sir. No, you really, that's a very fine point, yeah. I mean, they're in a sense, they're interrelated, and, you know, they're almost like a web, I suppose you could say. But I agree. I think there's something, the way in which we are now dealing with education does also, I think, yes, very much affect and also interact with, you know, other parts of the social, dominant social philosophy that we are, you know, at least to me, seeing on the right wing. And I think it's very sad and shameful.
Well, it's past sad, Harry, because what it does is it presages an America that will not ever be an America that does great things again.
Yeah.
To listen to the right wing, to listen to Willard Romney and the zombie-eyed Granny Starver Ryan, is to hear a description of an America that can do only one thing, and that is pursue hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
And that's a damn shame. You know, what was that in the Green News Report? What the hell was that quote? Well, I like wind and solar as much as the next guy. That's like saying I like strawberry ice cream as much as the next guy.
Right.
But by God, I want some tar sands on mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't we figure out a way to make those solar panels and wind turbine blades out of tar sands oil? I mean, can't we get it to harden up like a bowling ball or something? God almighty.
Well, you know, I don't want to say too much, and certainly I don't want to take time from other people who want to call in. But, no, I think everything you've said is spot on, and, you know, it also, frankly, involved just one more thing, which is, I think I mentioned the last time we talked, you know, about what is going on with this idea of science and of what is, you know, in a sense, close to reality or you know, at least close to the truth, and what is just plain nuttiness.
Right, and that's another, you know, that's another question for Willard, Harry. You know, what does he mean when he says, oh, I want to pursue basic science? Are we talking about, little Bob in ninth grade doing the electrolysis of water and shooting a test tube across the room when he stuck the match in the hydrogen?
I don't know. I have a friend who's a basic scientist in physics, but no, I'm sure that's not what, you know, Will or Robbie meant.
No, he meant he wants to invest only in science that results in fungible hydrocarbons.
Yeah, and in fact, that's not really basic science. That's applied, you know, science in a sense. Basic science is much deeper, talking about, you know, theories and
well, basic science talks about things like the scientific method.
That's right. And also, you know, larger theories of matter in the universe, et cetera, et cetera. You're right, but that's right. Well, the scientific method, of course, I'm not sure where that is anymore. But certainly, you know, the right wing seems not to have, I don't know where they learned their scientific method, but it wasn't from the books, you know.
Well, let's start with they didn't.
I'm sorry?
They didn't. The right wing does faith-based science, Harry. I'm not kidding. You know, you take two and you set it next to two, and Jesus comes in and does a miracle, and it becomes four. It's some, you know, the right wing is engaged in scientific transubstantiation. Okay.
Yes. All right. Well, that's a.
I mean, I'm really not kidding. This constitutional amendment that passed in Missouri.
I think it's such a wonderful phrase.
This constitutional amendment that passed in Missouri means that public school teachers in Missouri, and I guess even private school teachers, if the kid gets a question dead wrong, like what's the animal that looks like a horse and has black and white stripes, and the kid says Jesus told me it's a giraffe.
Yeah.
The teacher has to mark. Correct, Johnny. Go to the front of the class. You know, who was involved in the Battle of the Little Bighorn? The Germans and the Mexicans. How do you know that? Found it in the Bible. You're right.
Yeah, well, along that goes, the era when the dinosaurs and humans were interacting.
We all know, Harry, all know that those dinosaur bones are put down there in the rocks by the devil to confound the unbelievers.
Yeah.
Do you feel confounded? I'm confounded.
And then, needless to say, and then maybe this will be the last thing I'll bring up, what about the right-wing anatomy science of Todd Aiken?
Oh, God.
Where does this?
You know, the vaginal laser beam of justice? Really? I mean, there's a little video game of asteroids going on inside a woman's uterus?
I just, what can I say? Well, as you can hear, I'm speechless. I just don't know what to say about something like that.
It's breathtaking. But it has dangerous consequences here.
And I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's so absurd. I mean, it's really very, you're right, it's very dangerous to everyone, you know, and to the idea really of just, you know, having a world where certain, you know, where we have, you know, a science trying to make progress, you know, to make human life better.
Right, and if you stick around long enough, you will find out pretty quickly that one of the favorite movies of this little family of ours is Idiocracy. If you have not seen it, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Because early in the prologue to the film is quite possibly the most brilliant part of it, because it shows how America gets to be an idiocracy. And there's a segment where, yeah, thanks to medical science, Cletus's genitals were able to be put back together so that he could father children. And the next shot is a hard cutaway to Cletus standing with a bunch of, you know, little redneck girls around him saying, "I'm going to F all of y'all tonight." So, you know, while medical science is working on the next erection pill, you know, there's stuff that's going untaken care of, undone, because, you know, there's big money in erection pills. It's frightening, well, Harry. It's frightening.
Yeah, no, I will definitely put that on my list. I heard you mention the movie once before.
It's very silly, it's very irreverent, and very well worth your time.
Well, I will.
You've got a healthy, functioning sense of humor, and I imagine I'll probably get an email saying, "Dear God, Bob, what have you done to me?"
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure I will also thank you for enlightening me.
And kudos coming in to you from our buddy Jim, a former resident there of what he refers to as the Forbidden City on the Potomac.
yes.
He loves hearing from you, as does the rest of the Horn family, Harry. And don't be a stranger,
you,
all right?
As I think I said to you, and I'm going to let you go at this point, but I just want to say, as I think I mentioned to you in an email, you know, every morning now I wake up and I worry when I wake up that I'm going to be caught in the original film version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know. And every night I go to bed and say, oh.
Kind of keep that broom there and just sort of sweep it under the bed, make sure there's no pod.
No pods, that's right, when I go to bed, you know, because every day it seems somebody else is no longer talking sense, and, it worries me terribly.
Right. You don't know when you're going to turn on the TV. No, that's a very... one of our patron saints here is Kurt Vonnegut, along with Mark Twain.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt Vonnegut and Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. And you just never know when you're going to reach over, turn on the television, and you're going to see some guy with horns, you know, "Good morning, Norblap." And, you know, you're not on the planet anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It really feels that way.
To me, it definitely does. And, you know, as I said, it sincerely worries me terribly. I've never been so worried, quite honestly, about, you know, this country as I have been this year.
Well, I don't know if you've gotten around to it, but the other recommendation I would make is that you go forthwith over to joebagent.com. He is gone but not forgotten, B-A-G-E-A-N-T, and just start reading some of his essays. I think, Harry, you will feel comforted. And a group of his essays was gathered together into a published book called Waltzing at the Doomsday Ball.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it is, all those essays are there to read for free.
Yeah.
Read 9 Million Little Feet. Read his last essay, America, Why Your Peeps Be So Dumb.
Okay.
It's disturbing, but at the same time, there's a certain comfort that comes with it because you know that you are not, in fact, insane.
Yeah. Well, any recommendation from you comes well received. And in fact, I do want to say that, every night does give me great comfort despite everything I've said. So.
Well, thanks, Harry. Thanks very much, and don't be a stranger, all right?
Okay, take care now.
You too. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Our new-ish, not entirely new, but new-ish good friend, Harry. And we'll take a little break and come back. Light up the phones for the remainder of the program. We got Sandra on listening on hold, and that means there are and one other person on hold, and we've got four lines open for you to take advantage of. Waltzing at the Doomsday Ball just got me thinking about this little cut. John Fox sent it along. Agnes fell in love with it. It is beautiful. But by the same token, it somehow fits within the context of the conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, headonradionetwork.com. And we are trying to finish August in the good, if at all possible. Darlene's challenge got met last night. But we've got a ways to go yet. Somewhere around $500 and change, I think, or $400 and change. I haven't checked. If you want to hit the PayPal button or use the snail mail address, either way is much appreciated. This is how we stay going, and this is, in fact, this is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I got to admit, there was a choice between either Emmylou and Wrecking Ball, or based on my quip to Harry about interuterine asteroid games, the other possibility was another magnificent artist, to wit. The Pretenders, from their first album, and Space Invader. But I guess my partiality runs a little bit, leans a little bit more toward Emmylou, so you got Wrecking Ball by Emmylou Harris. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is The Horn, it's about 20 minutes past the hour, and we will return to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing pretty good. Just listening to some fairly interesting conversations today. And while I'm at it, hello, Sandra. She is listening on the other line.
Right.
So I want to say a few things. A couple weeks ago, I went with a friend to an Obama campaign rally here in the Springs. I didn't meet the president, but I was fortunate enough, albeit being blind, if you understand what I mean, to watch his interaction with people. And not knowing the president or Willard Romney, other than the public persona that we see, when you look at Romney, you see greed written, and there's nothing else there. It's soulless. It's a soulless, I've got to have everything, greed. Obama, President Obama, is at least human. He will stop on his way out to talk to kids. Romney doesn't do that. You know? And I'm not saying I've had my disagreements with the president, but all this rhetoric from the right over the past month has just made me more and more determined, I guess you will, to vote for the president in this election. I've wrestled with it like Malloy has. But whereas you and Sandra were talking about, or I think it was you that mentioned you wouldn't dare be caught in an Obama shirt, I'm kind
of... Yeah, I just don't want to be shot, Kevin.
I know, but I
you know, I wouldn't hesitate to wear one in D.C. I'd wear one, well, I might wear one in Birmingham, Alabama, but I ain't wearing one down to the Rippy Mart. I mean, there's people that go buy bread with 44 Magnums strapped to their hips down there.
No, I can understand that, but it's made me determined. I'm going to get one of those Obama shirts and wear them here in Colorado Springs. I avoid wearing the shirt at anything non-political. I've got a shirt that says, somewhere in Texas, the village is missing and they're idiot. And, of course, people take offense to that from the right, not realizing that the man is more idiotic than the village idiot ever thought of being, so to speak. But it's making me mad. Not that it hasn't made me mad, but just this last 3 weeks, with the Aiken remark the other day, the conversations they bring up as thinking those are political conversations. While they're talking about whether an egg is a person or not, we on the left want to be talking about things like the economy and how to get things running again and how to make America great again. And it's like you were saying, with Romney, the only thing he wants to do is given hydrocarbons to make himself and his 1% friends richer. And I've just reached a boiling point with it to where you know, as much as I can, I'm not going to take this lying down anymore. You can't. And it's like, oh, they had the gall to use that Twisted Sisters song on their campaign.
Yeah. I was proud of Dee Snider for saying, turn it off. Turn it off. Can't use it anymore. Turn it off. And there's been a couple of bands that have done that now. And it happens every presidential campaign season. You know, look, Willard, or maybe Agent Fred can just pass this along to Willard. You've got that whole moron Tabernacle choir out there. Stirring choral music from the moron Tabernacle choir for you and Paul's entrances. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Leave
our damn rock and roll alone.
Sure. You know, it's like Reagan back in the 80s co-opted the Springsteen song.
Yeah, and Springsteen set him straight in a damn hurry.
Yeah, but by that time the cat was out of the bag. I believe Reagan used that for his nomination speech that year. And it's just knowing Reagan knew what Springsteen was back then. It's the goal they have in using this stuff for their own use.
Well, actually, at the time, and I remember it well because I was a little rock and roll DJ then. At the time, Springsteen asked the question, "Wait a minute, have these idiots not even listened to the lyrics of the song?"
Yep.
Because all they could hear was "Born in the USA," and that's all that mattered. And the crowd took over from there. USA, USA, USA.
Yep. And I don't know. I am to a point with the campaign rhetoric that, on the right, not that Obama doesn't have his moments, but it's mostly coming from the right, where the stupidity of arguing whether two zygotes or two cells make a human. We all know the answer to that one already. And you talking with Juanita yesterday, and she said the word liberal Christianity. If you talk to somebody down by your Rippy Mart there in West Virginia, they don't know what liberal Christianity means. That ain't a religion.
No, you know? No, there ain't no such thing. Jesus was a good conservative.
Yeah. Not even knowing.
I mean, it's frustrating to me. I like having... I like having social interaction and so forth. I am irreligious. I am agnostic at best, when I'm not being outright atheistic. But at least I know I'd be welcome in a Unitarian church, and my nearest Unitarian congregation is 60 miles away. I mean, we need some sort of, you know, Unitarian or United Churches of Christ missionary here, just to give us somewhere to go besides, you know, the herpetological sanctuary down the road.
Exactly. Well, I can't go to my Unitarian church here on Sunday morning because we here in Colorado Springs don't have any transportation. We don't have buses that run on Sunday morning. And we want to cut the system more than it's cut now. And we've got a mayor that seems to think it's the good old Republican talking point, we want less government. But by God, with that fire, we were more than happy to take those federal funds.
Oh, heck yeah.
And, you know, and it's just like someone pointed out yesterday with the whole issue of choice. They want less government, but they're more than willing to tell a woman what she can do with her own body. Particularly a rape victim. You're going to tell a rape victim.
Right. You know, the first part, you know, Ronald Reagan said, we're going to get government off your back, and the rest of the Republican Party said, and into your uterus.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, I don't know. It drives me more to vote for the president, even knowing my criticisms of him. And just like Sandra said a while ago, what do they know that we don't? Because that bothers me just as well. Because I'm 53, I've never seen a campaign that has been run this badly like the Romney campaign, and yet I keep hearing these polls that say, oh, it's like 50 to 49% in favor of the president, maybe 52-48. And I'm thinking, there's no way. There's no way that Romney could even come close to catching the president at what he's doing now. And with these Bain things being released, oh, I can't wait. That's going to be fun to watch. So have you gotten any more about that, Bob, other than what you saw there? Do you know who released them?
Yeah, it was released by Gawker at 11 o'clock this morning. And there's 950 pages of documents about investments that he made that relate, for instance, apparently from what I was able to just read on the fly, his retirement deal in 1999 gave him shares in a company that was not created until 2002. Somebody's dummying up the books.
This is
worse than a speed freak trucker carrying two sets of books across the country. Sleep? What's sleep? No. They had two sets of books at the Upper Big Branch mine where they incinerated 29 human beings. Well, Romney's got twin sets too, and we're not talking about sheets and pillowcases either.
No, I just wonder what's going to happen. I think this is going to be the most interesting commission in my lifetime to watch.
Well, this is what Gawker said, Kevin. Today we are publishing more than 950 pages of internal audits, financial statements, and private investor letters for 21 cryptically named entities in which Romney had invested at minimum more than $10 million as of 2011, because they go back no earlier than 2009. That number is based on the low end of ranges he has disclosed. The true number is almost certainly significantly higher. Almost all of them are affiliated with Bain Capital, the secretive private equity firm Romney co-founded in 1984 and ran until his departure in 1999 or 2002, depending on whom you ask. Many of them are offshore funds based in the Cayman Islands. So here's what needs to happen. I don't know if Gawker's done it or they just put the documents out there and, you know, good luck and God bless you and Godspeed and the road rise before you. But what this needs now is a sure enough, no kidding, forensic accountant to sit there and with a little army of little baby forensic accountants go over this with a fine-tooth comb and just show us what kind of filthy crook Mitt Romney, Willard Romney, really is.
Yep. And that'll happen soon enough.
Well, I don't know. You know, we're the Charlie Brown side. We kick footballs that get pulled away and keep wondering that we keep that. The next one, no, she's going to lead. I'm going to kick that next one.
And, of course, then you got to ask the question, I don't know who the people are that run Gawker, if there's one person that does it or it's a group of people.
Well, it makes me wonder if maybe, you know, Anonymous might be out there.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking if they know who released these, that person might end up kind of disappeared in the next few weeks or months.
You know, it was kind of interesting. Willard deigned to stoop to speak to the press today, but anyone who wanted to speak to him had to promise beforehand not to ask him about abortion or not to ask him about, you know, Todd Akin. On the other hand, however, I guess he's going to have to add, or those 950 pages of documents. Now, you want something that's going to, you were talking about polling data and so forth?
Yep.
You want something that's just going to chill your bones, Kevin?
Okay.
This just came in from D, literally seconds ago, as a result of our conversation.
Uh-huh.
And all I have to do is find where it landed. No, that ain't it. No. Aw, come on. No, that's not it either. Okay, work with me here. Try to get a little cooperation. Open in new tab. Come on, where are you? All right, let's try it this way. The heck with the new tab. Because this is, I'm just looking at the title of the link, and it gives me it makes me feel like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. Electoral College Prediction Model points to a Mitt Romney win in 2012.
I have said it. I'll say it publicly. If Mitt Romney wins this election, we ought to be out in the streets that night. There is no...
Now, see, that's the difference between us and the other side. You're saying if Willard wins, we ought to be out in the streets, and I presume you say that, Kevin, because you're suggesting that the election would have been rigged. Okay, you want to get out in the streets. The other side is saying if Obama wins, we want to start killing people.
Right. And I'm wondering why that one person judge that said that hasn't already had the knock on the door.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't just one judge. That was the entire body of the Virginia Republican Party in a newsletter.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then, you know, you got this Looney Tunes judge down in Lubbock County, Texas that says Barack Obama's going to start a civil war. But that's not the end of it. I got story after story after story sitting here, Kevin. It ain't a pretty picture.
No, and no. You know, the difference between our side and their side is that all of their reason for saying that is based on fear and race and hatred. My reason for saying it is that there's something badly wrong with the system that needs to be fixed. And like Malloy has said dozens of times, I don't know what it's going to take to get people to be out in the streets, not in the tens of thousands, but in the millions. But I'm thinking this might be the thing that does it, because I just can't see how Romney. I could see how it can be rigged, like with the voter suppression and everything else. But even still, Romney has run such a bad campaign that I can't see anybody but the very right wing voting for him, and even then those people don't know what they're voting for. You know, I at least
How do you define the very right wing? What if you're sort of a moderate but you've got a really sickening racist streak?
I don't think you could be sort of moderate and have a very sickening racist streak. It's kind of antithetical. To the word moderate. I mean, you can have some racism still left in you, I suppose, but I don't think you could have racial hatred that you could hate the President of the United States simply for the fact he's black. You know, all of these things that these people have been saying for the last 2 weeks, aside from the whole issue of abortion, are based on hatred. That guy saying, the Virginia group there saying that in their letter, it's based on racial hatred.
No, but see, it ain't. We'd feel the same way about any president tried to give away American sovereignty to the UN under Agenda 21.
That, to me, is... Okay, Alex Jones just said that probably now about every president going back to Carter. If not further. He said it about... The man says this stuff to get people to buy his products. That's why I have no use for him. And I've seen him say it about Reagan and Bush as well.
Oh, I remember when all the little progressives during the W years thought Alex Jones was just cool because he was talking about how George W. Bush wanted to usher in the New World Order. And the liberals said, oh... Well, that Alex Jones, he must be a progressive. I remember it.
Except that at the same time he was saying Bush was ushering in the New World Order, he was also encouraging no abortion and things like that.
Right. Now, bear in mind, if this is the I don't want to waste a lot of time on, Alex Jones. But... You know, if Willard Romney wins, Alex Jones will start hustling videos on how his fleet of spaceships from Kolob are going to come, and they're going to have a book called To Serve Man, and they're going to herd us all onto the spaceships, take us off to Kolob, and then fatten us up and eat us.
Yep.
That's his hustle.
Exactly. And I've heard Alex Jones... more than a few times. I can't stand to listen to him. If I hear him...
No, I can't. You know, I get much more of it. I get more than 5 minutes of this. And, you know, I'm done. Or five seconds, I should say.
Yeah, it's more like...
You know, if I want to listen to Selma Diamond, I'll at least laugh and tune into a rerun of Night Court.
Exactly. And but it's just, it's the difference between him and, say, Malloy. Because
I wouldn't even say those two in the same breath or sentence or paragraph or universe, Kevin. I mean,
what I'm saying that for is that when Malloy says something like Bush is a fascist, Malloy isn't trying to sell a video or sell a whole thing of DVDs on the New World Order. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's where what I'm saying. And I don't think you or Malloy or most any of us on the left wing would ever stoop to the stuff Alex Jones is doing. But it just goes down. Now it's all the right-wing lunatics that are tuning in to Alex Jones and saying Barack Obama is coming for our guns, and the UN has camps that are ready to be put in place once Obama's inaugurated for his second term. Heck, it ain't even inaugurated. Once he gets elected again, he's going to throw everybody in concentration camps.
And see, we've just done something that is against all of my principles. We've just given that person about 3 to 4 minutes of free publicity on a radio network that operates on a shoestring. And it just, there's just evil, and there's evil, and there's evil. And the fact of the matter is, some foment it and some oppose it. You know, like I said, there's all these statistics out there. You know, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. But some interesting new polling data. I wish I could open Dee's link. It won't open for me. I'd like to see that Electoral College prediction or projection. But there's a new poll out. The Arab American Institute polled Americans, you know, in a scientific poll, and just 26% of the Republicans polled, Kevin, just 26% had a favorable view of Muslims at all. Okay? 57% of Republicans held strongly negative views of Muslims. And the only difference came when they were referred to as Muslim Americans and Arab Americans.
It upticked
a teensy tiny bit. But they are bigots and they are racists. And you know, this is the crowd who always refers to the President of the United States as Barack Hussein Obama.
Right. Because everybody knew that he was a Kenyan, and that's the thing that gets me about that man from Texas that sells those videos, because he comes out and, you know, gives the conspiracy that somehow 52 years ago, Barack's mom knew that he was going to be president and had to forge that birth certificate. You know, it just is ridiculous that what people will believe when they're stirred up by fear and hatred. And it's the
and we have a nation that is stirred up past fear and hatred. I mean, it's past stirred up. It's frenzied, Kevin. Frenzied.
Yep. So if the next time a Muslim American shoots a white American, are they going to go burn down another mosque? Because
what do you mean? Go burn down? There has been a string of there's the Johnny on the spot for profit media, not exactly doing their job again. But there's been an entire string of anti-Islamic attacks. Here, let's go over some of them real quick. North Smithfield, Rhode Island, where the mosque was vandalized on August 5th when their welcome sign was smashed with a hammer.
Yep.
Let's see. Joplin, Missouri, a mosque burnt to the ground on August the 6th.
Yep.
On August the 7th, in Southern California, pig legs thrown onto a mosque site that was proposed for that area.
Yep.
August the 10th, an individual fired, shot a pellet gun at the outer wall of a mosque in Morton Grove, Illinois, after Joe Walsh had made some hateful comments. August 12th, an acid bomb was thrown into a Muslim school in Lombard, Illinois. On August 13th, a Christian church in Detroit that has a Middle Eastern congregation was vandalized.
Yep.
August 13th, paintball attacks on the Grand Mosque of Oklahoma City. August 15th, in the dark and still of the night, a firebombing at a Muslim home in Panama City, Florida.
Yep.
August 16th, a visitor to a Muslim cemetery in Evergreen Park, Illinois, found several tombstones had been vandalized with hate graffiti, including racial epithets and insults against Muhammad.
Yep.
This, Kevin, is America.
Now, let me ask you a question. How many of the aforementioned crimes have been investigated?
Oh, they're under investigation, and they might possibly be, maybe, sorta, kinda, you know, a hate crime. Law enforcement is not certain.
Exactly. And that's another thing that, one other thing I wanted to say. It just made me think of it. If I could ask the Warren family, because I can't get on Facebook because of my supposedly accessible system, but if I could ask those of you that can, on your Facebook page, to post those 15 or 16 signs of fascism, I think that would be helpful. You don't have to say anything
about
them, it.
Post them on the Horn page, Head On Radio Network on Facebook. Absolutely. Yeah. Post them on my page. Sure.
Because
beats the hell out of getting requests for Cityville and Farmville, I can tell you that much.
I don't know what Cityville and Farmville are.
And lucky you are.
Well,
I think I probably get 30 dozen requests a day. And I haven't found the thing that turns that off yet. So, you know, but no, I think that's a good idea. I think it's a very good idea. Kevin, it's been a wonderful conversation. Have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Yes, sir, Bob, and thank you very much for all the foreign listeners that make this show worth listening to.
Thank you. Indeed, thanks do go out. I appreciate it, Kevin. You have a good night.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Kevin, calling from Colorado Springs. Dear God. It's like some sort of rogue... You know, sometimes, under certain circumstances, we guffaw and we laugh and we yuck it up. We have our fun. But some nights, it's just a damned rogues gallery. You probably don't remember the name Stacy Campfield, but you'll remember what he did. A while back, he proposed the so-called Don't Say Gay Bill in the state of Tennessee. Well, State Senator Stacy Campfield went on the Michael Signorilli show on Sirius XM Out Q. And why Michael Signorilli would give this creep any airtime whatsoever is just beyond me. Just report on what the creepy bastard does. They don't need any more of our airtime. Because there's 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of any broadcasting whatsoever that even tends toward being progressive or liberal. But anyway, Michelangelo Signorilli, who is a real journalist, had this creepy Stacy Campfield on his radio show today. David and Maine sent this along. He said, most people realize that AIDS came from the homosexual community. It was one guy screwing a monkey, if I recall correctly,
and then having sex with men. It was an airline pilot, if I recall. My understanding it is that it is virtually, not completely, but virtually impossible to contract AIDS through heterosexual sex. Now, take that on the road to Africa, Senator Campfield. How them little babies getting the AIDS, huh? Homosexuals do not naturally reproduce. It has not been proven that it is nature. It happens in nature, but so does bestiality. That does not make it right, or something we should be teaching in school. Welcome to America. Then, there's the library. You know, you go to the library, and it's supposed to be sort of a sedate and boring place, unless you're one of those people who loves going over old documents and things like that. Sit and read the newspaper, maybe. Look for a book. Often the librarian will help you find a book via interlibrary loan that that isn't actually in the stacks. But not so at a library in old Virginia, where 30 people, armed to the teeth, showed up to protest last week a proposed law that would ban the carrying of firearms into a library. They was mad, don't you know? Their Second Amendment rights was being trounced by them librarians. Philip Van Cleve organized the protest. He's president of Virginia Citizens Defense League. He said, "What if they'd said, we don't allow African Americans except if allowed by law? Would that be okay? I don't think so. The rule implies that no one's allowed to protect themselves on the property." Because, you know, we need guns in libraries. The rule in question at the library says carrying concealed weapons is prohibited except as permitted by law. And so, of course, these pissant baby right-wingers seem to think that not being able to take a gun to the library is the same thing as chattel slavery. Another protester objected and said, "The library shouldn't be firearm free. Look what happened at that movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, huh? They've still got it in their heads that if only everybody in that movie theater had been armed, no one would have been killed. When in fact the death toll probably would have climbed into the hundreds." Let's see, in the Old Dominion, you can openly carry in parks. You can strap on and go to the grocery store to get your PB&J, just like here. You can buy as many handguns as you want per month. The Old Dominion's weakened background checks. This is Virginia, where a law-abiding, lawful purchaser of firearms created the horror of the Virginia Tech massacre. This is America. This is your America and my America, and you can't even go to the God-blessed library without worrying about some law-abiding gun owner suddenly ticking down to zero and deciding to take out the commies who were over there reading Marx. I seen him. He was a-sitting right there. He was reading one of them liberal books, and I figured it is time to take him out, because I'm a law-abiding gun owner.
Of course, after they pull the trigger, they become non-law-abiding gun owners. But you know what? We don't want to trample on anybody's Second Amendment rights because they're law-abiding gun owners until they decide to kill somebody. Oh, wait, we're back to square one. 30 people armed to the teeth screaming at a library. At a library! A library. A repository of knowledge and hopefully no small amount of wisdom. A library. Well, we want to bring our goddamn guns to the library because we can't read unless we feel safe, and we only feel safe if we've got our blue steel penis extension strapped to our hip. A library where children come for story time. Mommy, why is that man carrying a gun? Well, because he's a paranoid maniac. No, you wouldn't say that. You just don't take your children to the library anymore. It is by design. It is not by accident. It is by design. Because if we can just keep them youngins out of the library and get them down to the firing range like they need to be, instead of learning that book learning in the library, well, we can get back to an America that reveres God. Let's try to get one more phone call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
$8,000
Yeah, Jim, I don't know.
It's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Well, and let me just add one more thing to the Can I just add one more thing to the library story? Because this is precious, too.
Please do.
The Public Religion Research Institute surveyed a bunch of teabaggers. 55% of teabaggers think people should be able to bring guns to church, too, not just the library.
Well, sure, Bob. Why not? I mean, after all, they's free.
Yeah.
You know? Free to blow each other's asses right out the church window. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong in this country. You know, I saw a photographic montage of meetings of these people the other day on television, and it was in black and white, not color. Thank God it was in black and white. But you know what it looked like?
Klan rally?
It looked like El Greco had painted the face or faces of an exhumed graveyard with the light of a burning town.
That's profound imagery, Jim.
Well,
and maybe that's the metaphor for America right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's just let's bring back Dodge City and the Wild Wild West. And
yeah, just don't sit with your back to the door if you're holding aces and eights, all right?
Whatever, and, you know, and Miss Kitty and Marshall Dillon and Doc and who
don't
else?
Forget Chester.
Chester, definitely. And, oh, God, I don't know.
Believe me, that's how I wind up finishing a lot of the shows, Jim. Which is what we've done. I'm glad to hear from you, but we got to roll, my friend.
You already have. You roll right over me, so I just thought I would.
Sorry.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. I just wondered, if, you know, what was going on and how you were. And
hanging in and hanging on.
Yeah. I want you to bring, I sent you an email earlier about the 501c4 dark money groups.
Yeah, yeah, Well, maybe we'll have an extended conversation about that in the next
that
few nights.
That sounds good. Good night.
All right, take care, Jim. Bye now. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for keeping it all going. Thanks for meeting Darlene's challenge. We're close, but we're not there. So anybody that wants to hit the PayPal button, it's mighty appreciated. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, you with your kind contributions of both your time and your finances, your ideas, your calls, your participation in the chat room, your emails. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our blogger Texas Betsy, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox in Australia for keeping everything rolling technically, and thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. They're badly in need of help, just like the horn is. But we all are, aren't we? CRMW.net and AcheAct.org. Go there and learn how to help end Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.